Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yes, here we go, another big guest, John Daly. How you doing, big man, all right?
I'm fine, yeah, good.
Thanks very much for coming on.
No, thanks for having me on.
John Daly, football player. I look like John Daly, the golfer, so we're fucking...
Well, I've been confused for him a few times.
Have you?
Aye.
He's huge, isn't he?
Are you a big boy, all right?
Need to ask you as well, celebrity pals, Amy McDonald.
Yes.
Richie Forster, how'd that come about?
Obviously, when I went to Rangers, me and Fozzie signed at the same time, and got on really well. So, you know, that kind of just blossomed, and he started to see Amy around the same time. I remember actually one of the first times we went out together, me and Foz, and he went back to Amy's house, and I was staying at Foz's that night.
Right.
And I rang my missus and I said, oh, Linda, I'm going back to Amy's house with Foz. And then my battery went on my phone, right? Oh, and she's panicking, she's thinking, what's going on here? So one of the next home games when Amy came to watch and Linda was at the game, she marched over, oh, hi, Amy, I'm Linda. And she's like, my missus is quite upfront.
Love that.
So now they get on actually really well as well now. So we were at their wedding there in Vegas, which was incredible.
Wow. Does she sit and play the guitar at part, isn't it?
Occasionally she's got the guitar out when we've had a few nights out and maybe gone back to her house and she's got the guitar out. I actually... trying to get her to get me on her album, but she won't have it.
I'm going to come to the next party, all right? I'm in. Right, mate, we'll go on to the career. What was the pathway in football like over in Ireland as a kid? Cherry Orchard, wasn't it?
Yeah, Cherry Orchard.
Big club.
Yeah, it's one of the bigger clubs in Dublin, one of the bigger schoolboy clubs. I started off in my local team, local estate team, Ashwood. It was just a couple of parents put a team together because there was loads of kids in the estate that played. So I think it was like an under-10s team. I was 7, just starting out, went there for a year and then went down to Cherry Orchard, which was quite near where my dad grew up. So he knew a few of the coaches there, managed to get me in on a trial, got onto the squad. And then just from there, just went through the age groups with Cherry Orchard and loved it there. It was great.
Good upbringing.
Yeah, and really good club. You know, as I said, it's one of the bigger clubs in Dublin. And a lot of good players have come out of Cherry Orchard.
Were you still a target man at 7?
I was actually a tall, skinny guy that could run channels and I was quick. I used to be quick.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah, I think the injuries took their tolls on me, on me over the years. But no, I think as a kid, you just play the game. And I was always kind of in that attacking area. I loved scoring goals. And I kind of just went from there. Going to Stockport when I went over originally on trial, I just got a good feeling off the place and a good vibe off the coaches and the people that worked there, and so I felt like the right decision at that time, and happy I went there.
I played at Stockport. It's a good club, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it's a decent ground, and they had their own training ground at the time, so I'm not sure if they still have that, but you know, I probably lost my way a bit. You know, you're moving away from Ireland at 15. You know, you're a young
kid. Would you go out a lot?
Yeah, and that was probably like, you know, you go over with the best intentions that, you know, you're going to be a football player, but then you kind of get caught up with everything that goes along with that, and you probably lose focus a bit. And that's probably why, you know, when you go back to the Dundee United thing with the younger ones, you know, you're trying to help them from the experiences that I've had at Stockport, where I kind of maybe went off the rails a little bit and lost my way and... lost my focus a bit, and you kind of see that, you know, the rewards in the game nowadays are massive, that if you can keep that focus, it can really help you.
Gary Megson was the manager. Now, he looks like an absolute lunatic to me. Is
he? When I went in, obviously, I was in the U team with Craig Madden, who was a former player, and Gary was the manager. Mike Phelan was his assistant.
Oh, was it Mike Phelan? Was it?
Mike Phelan was his assistant. So, like, you know, the good pedigree, good manager, and you know, being exposed to their training sessions and being involved with the first team at that age was great. And you know, he was someone that, a bit like probably Levine, had a presence, you know, and didn't take any crap off anyone. You know, just his decisions were made, and if you didn't follow that, then you were soon out the door.
See, if you were a young boy going up to the first team and you were given the ball, maybe with Megson, would he be on you straight away, or would he give you a bit of time because you were younger?
The players probably were. You know, it's obviously changed that. Like, yeah. The game has changed massively, even in terms of, like, you know, when I signed as a youth player, like, you had to do the jobs, you had to clean the boots, you had to do anything. And if the boots were dirty, they'd get thrown back at you. And, you know, so you can't get away with that now. Yeah. You couldn't get away with that now. You'd be dragged up in front of the HR, you know. Yeah. So it was acceptable back then, and you had to do it, you know. And I recall, you know, going into the stadium, cleaning all the seats before the season kicked off. And that was part of your upbringing as a young player.
Carlton Palmer became the manager. What was he like? Big name.
Yes. Carlton, to be fair to him, I felt for him. You know, again, when you look back over these situations, you know, at the time you probably don't realise, but he kind of got put in a situation where he had to empty all the probably experienced players and bring all the younger ones through who were good players, but probably weren't ready for that. That exposure to first team football at that stage. So I think, you know, he didn't have anyone on the park that could help us and galvanise us and bring us together. You know, if you're winning a game 1-0 and you're looking to use that experience to see the game out, he didn't have anyone because he had to cut the wage bills. But he was someone who, he was a character, you know, he was, you know, he loved team bonding nights. So again, you know, bringing the team out on nights out, and he was partial to a bottle of Dom Perignon.
Yes, love that.
Yeah, he loved ordering a bottle of DP for CP. Was his shout. You know, and me and Jim Goodwin were there at the time. I used to laugh about that, but you know, he was a character, and he was someone that had the right intentions, but probably didn't get helped at the time.
So see, when you were young kids, would you be playing up front in training and Jim Goodwin would be playing centre half?
Jim played midfield.
Did he?
He was midfielder.
Did you ever get on the end of Goodwin elbow in training?
No, I stayed away from Jim. Uh-huh. Jim was a hard player. He was a hard player, like, and he had a bit more experience about him than I had at that time. So you would just either try and stay on his team, or you would just stay away from him.
Loan spells, Bury and Grimsby. We've had a lot of people on here who say when they go on loan, that's when they realise, like, I need to get my finger out. I didn't want to come back to play at this level. Was it similar with you?
Yes and no. I think the loan spells for me were an opportunity to go and play. See, when you're not in the first team, you know, as a young kid or a younger pro, I think first team football is important. You know, playing reserve team football for me, it has its purpose and it serves a purpose, but...
A bit fake.
But, aye. Yeah. I think getting out and playing first team football and getting exposed to that, and that's kind of why I wanted to do that. And you know, thankfully enough, I went to Bury and Grimsby. Grimsby was, that was a low point in my career. But
why?
Just, no disrespect to Grimsby, but it's not a very nice part of the world. And it was, you know, I drove over from Manchester. I just couldn't bring myself to stay in Grimsby. And yeah, it just wasn't. It was a quick month that ended with a red card. That shouldn't have been a red card, but probably looking back now, I'm thankful that I did get the red card because it meant to cut it short.
It cut it short in your back. And then, mate, game changer, move to Hartlepool.
Yeah.
How did that move come about?
Well, Stockport had quite a number of managers, you know, and I probably felt like I'd served my time and it was coming to an end. And I think when Sammy McElroy was the manager, I'd spoken to him about how I felt and how I wanted to try something new, and just to try and, for my own personal kind of career and development, just to try and kick on again. And he agreed with me, and we spoke about trying to get something. But then he got the sack, yeah. And a new manager comes in, and Chris Turner came in, and he spoke to me and said, oh, I want you to stay, I want you to be part of my plans. But my mind was already on moving and leaving, and you know, I don't think he was overly pleased, but I'd kind of got to the stage at Stockport where I felt I needed to go, and Hartlepool came up. I had an opportunity to go to Rochdale or Hartlepool, and Rochdale is in the Manchester area. I could have stayed in my house, but I still felt that that would have been too similar.
Yeah, needed a change.
So I needed a change, of environment, and went up to Hartlepool. Neil Cooper was the manager.
He's meant to be a hero, Neil Cooper, isn't he?
He was, yeah, great man. Great man.
Funny.
Aye, really, really good guy. You know, and someone that I enjoyed playing for. And when you go to a club where, you know, the manager's gone out of the way to bring you in, you feel good, eh? But it took me a while to get going there. It took me a while to settle. And then when I did settle and got off the mark, I felt part of the group there, you know.
He's nearly reached the championship playoff final.
Aye.
Brilliant, isn't it, the playoff finals?
It is when you win, I'd imagine, yeah, but not when you get B.
So what was your score?
So we got B 4-2.
Two in extra time.
So we played Sheffield Wednesday at the Millennium Stadium, which was brilliant. Would have loved to play at Wembley, but I think it was getting done up at the time. So we went to Millennium Stadium. I was on the bench that day, came on and put us ahead with my first touch. You know, put us 2-1 up, and then 8 minutes to go. I'm not sure who got brought down for them. I think it was Talbot got brought down in the box penalty, and Stephen McLean stepped up and scored, put 2-2, and then we were down to 10 men and got B 4-2 in extra time.
And then Hartlepool have bombed since then, haven't they?
Aye, well, they've not done particularly well.
Was it still the porter cabins when you were getting changed in the porter? Oh my, I used to hate that, mate.
Yeah, it was a good club. The porter cabins obviously weren't great. The stadium, I felt, was fit for purpose for the size of the club. They had a good training ground in Durham near the Union, which was decent.
Yeah.
So you were only kind of in and out the stadium once every 2 weeks.
Right.
But no, I enjoyed my. I did. I really enjoyed my time there, and I took a lot from it, and you know, learned about adversity. You know, when people tell you you're not good enough for them or not part of their plans, and just backing yourself and believing in yourself. And then, like I said, in football, something will always come about, and you'll always get an opportunity to prove yourself. And thankfully, I did that when I was there.
Hartlepool got relegated, and then the career kicks off, young man. Dundee United, who'd phoned you while at Hartlepool? Was it just an agent?
Just an agent had phoned me. So I was still in that process of, you know, although I'd kind of done well, I still knew how quickly that could turn and how it could change. So I was still looking for that kind of next move, and I got a call about Dundee United. And, you know, at the time, if I'm being brutally honest, it gets no coverage in England, you know. So yeah. I didn't know an awful lot about Scottish football. So I spoke to Gav, and he was just like, well, Dundee United are a big, big club. Yeah. So he said, if you get the chance to go, just at least go up and see it. But he said, I would jump at the chance. So thankfully, I took his advice, and I had a phone call from Hunty as well. Noel Hunty was at Dundee United at the time.
Yeah. How did you know him? Just from kids?
We were in the same Ireland 21s team, yeah, a couple of times. So I kind of knew him through that, but didn't know him that well. I've obviously got to know him over the years and built that friendship with him now. So he made the call. Gav had kind of gave me a good recommendation and came up to see the club.
No brainer, Dundee United and Hartlepool.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, you're going from a stadium like that. It's a tidy little stadium, Victoria Park, but you know, it's quite small. And you've got, as you mentioned, the porter cabins, to then going and walking out the tunnel at Tannadice, and you're like, this proper football club. So it was a great opportunity to come up to Scotland and again try something different. You know, the game is totally different. You know, I would come off playing at Hartlepool and I'd have like stud marks here, stud marks on my back, and it was just like the physical side of the game was like incredible. When you come to Scotland, it's probably less so the physicality. It's more about playing the game and playing football, and that was something I really enjoyed.
And Craig Levein was a gaffer, proper gaffer. What were your initial impressions of him?
My first proper introduction was halftime at Rangers in my first game, when we were 2-0 or 3-0 down at the time, and he came in and he just tore shreds through Gary Kennett and threw bottles at him.
What did he say?
I can't even remember. I just remember sitting there thinking, who have I signed for? You know, it was honestly, I was sat there and I was like, what have I done? Like, I've come up here and I'm signed for a madman, you know. But he had that presence. He had that, you know, he was intense. And I think his attention to detail was really, really good. You know, the video analysis kind of stuff. We touched on it at Hartlepool, but that was the first time I'd properly been exposed to, you know, video analysis, like every Monday, and he would pull up every little detail.
Do you remember the first time you got it?
Not really, no. But it would have been times, but I always tried to use that as fuel. You know, if someone has a go at me, I always try and use it to prove people wrong, you know, and I try to, you know, I think that's probably how people got the best out of me as a player when they did have a go at me, you know, whereas other people probably don't respond to that. And I kind of responded to that, and I used that as a, like, I'm going to show you, like, you know.
Was Gary Kenneth, was that incident the worst you'd seen with Levine Gord, or was there any others?
I'm sure Kenzer was probably the unfortunate one. He used to get it quite a bit. I think he was on loan at Cowden Beath maybe at the time, and we used to train kind of around Dundee. And we used to change at Tannadice. And we'd all meet at Tannadice, get changed, jump on the minibuses, go wherever we were training, whether it was Baldragon School or down by the fire station or whatever. And I remember Kenzer was in because he was obviously on loan to a part-time club, and Craig had called him in, and you could hear him from the changing room just berating him and going through him because he'd said something after the game about, I'm going to show Craig that I should be at Dundee United. And it was like...
So you could hear him from the...
So we could hear him from the changing room just absolutely annihilating him, you know. And I was just like, well, I don't want to be on that room. But that's how he was, eh? That was kind of how...
He was a top manager then, wasn't he?
That's how football was, you know. And that's, like I said, as kind of football's evolved, he's changed how he approaches it. And he was obviously different at heart, you know, different than what I'd remembered as a player.
Paul Hartley said when he went to Hearts, his level of fitness and people that he'd played with before was totally different to what Craig Levein expected an SPL player's fitness to be. Was that someone at Dundee United as well?
Aye, yeah.
But so I think you were fit enough?
Well, I probably thought I was, but he clearly didn't. So we used to go down, like, you'd have days where you'd just go to the gym and he'd get you on the treadmill and he'd expect you to do certain running on the treadmill. And I remember on the treadmill, I'm going as quick as I can, eh? And then I'm either jumping and putting my feet to the sides and holding on, or I'm shooting off the back of the treadmill. So I've jumped on, and he's like, John, get your hands off the treadmill. So I've jumped back on, and I'm going again. And then again, I've done it, and he's like, John, hands off the treadmill. And I've gone, and he's like, John, if you do that one more time, yous are all starting again. And all the boys are then thinking, like,
oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. So, and I remember Ranks tells me about it all the time. He always canes me about it, you know. But you were expected to do certain things and get the fitness to a certain level. And
so see, when you jumped back on, did you end up falling off?
No, I managed to somehow probably put my hands on when he wasn't looking. I remember we were doing usually was taking a passing drill kind of just after the warm-up. So the players are probably still thinking it's still a progression from the warm-up, and the standard wasn't great. The ball's gone astray, and he stopped it and he said, lads, this must improve, or else I'm going to run you. And we were kind of
thinking, "There's no way you're running us.
We're playing tomorrow. There's no way we're running." So I started back up. A couple of minutes pass, still rubbish standard. He stops us, gets us on the line, every line and back, like as quick as we can. And we were like, "Wow, right?" So you have a couple of players who, you know yourself, when they say run to that line, they think
2 yards
it's
away.
2 yards away, and that does my head in. But couple of boys come short. He's obviously clocked it. We all finish thinking, he's gone right. He's not going to the line. You're all going again. We're thinking, it's game off tomorrow. So bang, again, back into the passing drill. And it was like, right, lads, if this isn't up to standard, yous are doing it again. Wow. And it was like...
But it's gone for I love that, mate.
Aye, it's gone. Society.
The standards know what it should be, then we need to do something about it.
Aye, I agree to a certain extent, but I think society has changed and the game has changed, and it's, you know, you probably can't get away with stuff like that anymore. But it didn't do us any harm. Eh?
Would you go for anyone, or was there people who would be exempt? Did you have like a couple of favourites that you wouldn't shout at, or was everyone fair game?
No, everyone was fair game. Eh? Even big Lee Wilkie. You know, I remember the day before the League Cup final against Rangers, we went down to train our Hearts training ground. And I'd just come back from an injury. So I was trying like a bear to get in the squad, and I was like in training, I was running about, going, doing things that I probably wouldn't run in channels, like never ran a channel in my life apart from when I was a kid. And Big Streaky was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm just trying to get myself back in the squad." So something happened at a throw-in where I've kind of done something and I've ran away from him. And Craig was up in the stand watching the game, and he stopped and he's gone, "Streaky, do it right." And Big Streaky has gone, "Oh," I've gone back at him. And it's kind of like, I'm then standing there thinking, shit, like, I've stitched Streaky up here, like, and the big man, like, I'm not going to take him on because he'd knock me out.
Yeah, he's about to be happy.
He's a big boy, You know, so I was then thinking, shit, like, what have I done here? But he would go for anyone, eh?
Yeah.
Like, Barry Robson got it in a video analysis session once, you know, not tracking a runner.
And would Robbo take that?
You would have to, because it's clear as day on the video, you know.
Brilliant.
You know, you couldn't get away with anything, huh? And that's what I say, the attention to detail, like, it wasn't as if he had one rule for you and then one rule for me. It was like, if you didn't do it, you got pulled up. And I think that was, every player knew where they stood, and they knew what was expected.
Amazing, love that. Who impressed you players-wise? You said, mentioned Barry Robson, he was top at United at that time, wasn't he?
Aye, he was a top player. He was another one who
so
drove
aggressive.
In the training, and as we spoke about, was you trained as you played, and everything was done to a tempo. And if the standards dropped, you had boys like Baz and Streaky and boys like that would demand.
Did it ever come to a boys?
It did a couple of times. I remember big Lee Wilkie and Kovacevic.
Oh,
had
what a fight
coming together. It wasn't really, to be honest.
What, was Kovac taking that?
No,
it was,
but Big Streaky just gave him a slap and fractured his eye socket.
Wow.
Aye, look, I wasn't.
And what
even
was that over? Just standards not being good enough?
I can't remember. I can't recall. It was a 5-a-side game or a 7-a-side game, and it got a bit heated. And the two of them came together, and Streaky just boom, fractured his eye socket, and I was just like, if that's what you can do with a slap, imagine what you could do with a proper punch.
And would Levine not mind that now? Would he quite
I
like that?
Do you know what? I don't think he was there that day. I think it was Eusty that was taking training. So Eusty was probably panicking, thinking, oh my God, I've been asked to take training. And now we've got a boy with a fractured eye socket.
Another wee angry man, I need to ask you about Willow Flood. He was the angriest guy I've played with. Just moaned constantly. Was he the same at United?
Yeah. No, definitely. But again, just someone who wants to win and just wants to drive standards and not moaning for the sake of moaning when things aren't
good enough.
Things aren't good enough and the standards that you expect. And, you know, Willow's played at some top clubs and with some really good players. So, you know, when boys like that are trying to drive standards, then, you know, you're trying to take it on board.
You and Hunt hit it off straight away, didn't you? You had a great partnership.
Aye. Well, I think Hunty was probably quite happy to have someone that, you know, took a bit of probably pressure off him, you know, because, you know, a lot of even at corner kicks, you know, a lot of the bigger boys would mark me, and Hunty was excellent in the air, you know, and he was great spring, and he could get up there and hang, he had great hang time. You know, and I think I think we complemented each other really well in terms of, like, he would do the running beyond, whereas I would try and link the game and I think the friendship off the park helps that as well, you know, when you get on really well.
First game, mate, 5-0 defeat at Ibrox, as you said, Gary Kenneth got slaughtered. How was that Monday morning debrief?
Personally, it was okay because I got a pass mark, surprisingly. I don't know how.
What did he actually say, John? You get pass marks?
No, I think he just, you know, he said, like, after the game, I think it was myself and I can't mind one other person hadn't stopped trying and hadn't stopped working, in his opinion, and I kind of got pass, and maybe players were looking, thinking, you know, new kid on the block getting teacher's pet.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was something that I tried to do regardless of score, keep going. But it was definitely a baptism of fire going to Ibrox's first game. I think it was Walter Smith's first game back in charge.
Right.
And battered 5-0. So, yeah.
Are you thinking you'd made the wrong decision at that time?
No, not at all. I think when you go, like, especially when I look at the level I'd been at, you know, Stockport, Hartlepool, you play against some decent clubs, some big stadiums, but, you know, majority of time you're going to the likes of Accrington Stanley, where, you know, just holes in the roof and the chain, you know, or you're getting changed in the porta cabin.
Oh, it's the worst, mate.
You're then going to, you know, play at Ibrox, yeah, which is a real football stadium, a proper football stadium, and it's like, you know, a great experience regardless of the result.
First goal, 90th minute equaliser against Celtic. What a relief. First goal in such a big game as well. That day, your confidence world of good.
Yeah. I think when you go to any club, I said about Hartlepool, it seemed to always take me time to settle and get going. And then, you know, the first training session, or one of the first training sessions I had at Dundee United, we'd done 11v11 and scored a hat-trick in 8 minutes. And I was like, and all the boys were probably thinking, who's this guy? And then you go into a game and you can't hit a barren door. So like, it was great. I think in that game, I think if I remember, Baz had just been sent off and big streaky had been thrown up front and the ball had come over his head and I've just swung at it and it's gone in the bottom corner. It gets us a point and, you know, such a big game for the club and for myself. So it was a great, great way to get off the mark and to get going. And then I think the following game against Aberdeen, we went up to Pataudry 1-4-2, scored a penalty in the first minute or so. So I felt that I was on, you know, on a bit of momentum, on fire, starting to find my scoring form. And then, obviously, two or three games later, you then get injured.
Nightmare, mate.
Yeah.
Here's the shit, you got injured and you came on against Celtic in the final game of the season. You just ready to go for the season after that, fresh start, get...
So I think it was Inverness. I remember it well. I just jumped for a header, landed on my knee, kind of jarred a different way. And I was like, that doesn't feel right. And I was kind of running about and I went to run after a ball, just chase
you
the ball
need to
down.
Stop running after
I know,
balls, mate.
Just target man. So I was chasing the ball down and I was like, that doesn't feel right. And I actually remember walking off to the touchline and going, Gaffer, my knee just doesn't feel right. And he was like, right, but get off the park. And I was like, all right. I actually felt bad for having to come off. But it turns out that I'd like ruptured my posterior cruciate ligament. So I ended up out for, I think it was supposed to be 9 months. I came back against Kilmarnock might have been the November, so it was like 7 months. But 2 games later at Hibs, I done my ankle. So like the start of my United career was just plagued with injuries, and not just like, you know, little niggly ones, like major injuries that are going to keep you out for a substantial amount of time. And and then from that, when I came back and played Celtic, and it was funny because at the end of that, after that game against Celtic, the end of that season, I had a phone call from the agent saying that Craig had, you know, he's bringing in other strikers, and if you find another club, you can move on. So I was in that same situation as I was at Hartlepool.
Did you go and see Levine after you'd heard that?
No, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to just... Because I knew the players that he was bringing in were different, huh?
Who was that, Sindaza?
No, that was Roy O'Donovan, Warren Feeney at the time.
Right.
So you kind of look and you go, right, the different types of strikers and they don't kind of offer the same
qualities
that I can to the team. They're good players in their own right, but, you know, they're different. So, again, I just kind of bided my time, wait for that opportunity. And I was played against Kelvin Beath at... away at Station Park, I think, and scored a hat-trick.
Right.
So that kind of then put me back in the shop window at Dunham, put me back in the thoughts, the thought process of the manager, and gave me that opportunity to then kick on at United. But then, it was funny because you kind of think, I could be on my way out here.
Yeah, I bet you a lot of Dundee United fans didn't know that. You were told at one stage you could go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was told I'd be like fourth or fifth choice striker, so... But that's football, and that happens. And I can understand the mindset and the thinking behind it, because I think I'd maybe only played 17 games in 2 seasons and had 2 major injuries. So
you're
probably thinking, like, there's a good chance he's not going to come back the same player.
But then you are flying, and there's talk of a new deal. I love this story. So your agent phones you and tells you the deal that you're getting?
Aye.
And you're...
Yeah. So... I came back from them injuries, done really well, and the club then decide they want to keep me. There's negotiations that the agent is dealing with. He rang me up and said, this is the offer, and I thought, that's brilliant. I'm happy to sign. Great. When they were signing, he told me to hold fire, that, you know, I think I can squeeze a little bit more money out of him. And I said, well, look, as the agent, that's your job, but I'm happy with that deal. 10 minutes later, the phone goes,
But make sure you tell him I'm happy with the deal.
So I said, look, tell him, like, you know, if you can't get any more, tell him that I'm happy and you're just trying to see if you can get more. Yeah. But the phone rang 10 minutes later and it was the agent saying, Craig's not happy with you. And I was like, what do you mean he's not happy with me? I've done nothing wrong. I said, I'm happy with my deal. So I ended up basically not sleeping that night, just thinking, oh God, what's happening here? So I went in the next morning. Craig and Eustace were out setting up the pitch and I just said, Gaffer can have a word. And he, I knew he wasn't happy because the way he responded. And I said, look, the contract offer, I don't know what's being said, but I'm extremely happy with it. I'm happy to go down to Tannadice after training and sign the contract. But I am really happy with it, and I was happy with it, and I appreciate the offer, you know, because obviously the club have stood by me with my injuries, etc., etc. And he said, well, that's good, because you weren't going to play on Saturday, now you're back in the team.
Did he?
Yeah,
bro, so, and then did you sign it that day?
I think it might have been the day or the day after I signed it, yeah. So, but as I said, I was delighted to stay on. It was a really good, it was probably one of the best clubs I played for at that time.
See, halfway through the season, he left the Man of Scotland. Was there any indication? There was a lot of media speculation, wasn't there?
There was media speculation, and there was, you know, he was doing well at United, and you kind of, again, in football, you don't believe it until it happens, you know, because there's always speculation, whether it's transfers or whatever, and with managers moving here, there, and everywhere, and it's kind of all hearsay until it actually happens. And when it happened, it was a surprise, to be honest. Obviously, we've seen the press and the reports on it, but we were surprised when it happened, and that then brings a bit of uncertainty for, you know, we had a group that were really close and felt we were doing well, but it just brings that uncertainty of, you know, a new manager, which, you know, I'd seen numerous times before at other clubs when a new manager comes in and you're then deemed surplus to requirements. So, you know, that uncertainty comes in and then you start to maybe have, you know, that little bit of worry about what's going to happen.
Were you happy with Peter Houston getting the job?
Yeah, I think as a group we were, you know, like we obviously all liked Houston as an assistant. You know, and I think Houston, I think at the time, if I remember correctly, he said he wasn't wanting the job, but he was happy to kind of take the reins until someone came in. But, you know, Houston was a good guy and someone that everyone liked and someone that we all kind of knew where we stood with him. And with that, if he takes the job, it gives a bit of continuity to what's happening. And then you don't have that kind of period when a new manager comes in and he's assessing everything. He just knows what you can do. And usually, to be fair to him, I think he tweaked a few things and he probably gave the team maybe a little bit more of freedom to attack in an attacking sense, and you know, maybe introduced a couple more of the younger ones and gave them a bit more game time.
See, who did you enjoy playing with the most? Hunt, Goodwill, and
that's a tough question.
Good question, Joey.
They're all good.
That's
players.
That's why we're the best about, big man.
Aye, no, I'm going to be impartial and say I enjoyed playing with them all because they all offered different things, and they were all quite similar in a way that, like, they did the things that I didn't do. You know, they ran about, and you know, I think they complimented us. We complimented each other well. Do you know what I mean? And I think Goody was someone who you could give him the ball, and he could go and just make something happen. Johnny was similar in the sense that he could, you know, get the ball on his left foot and he could put it in the top corner from 30 yards. Hunty was probably technically wasn't as, you know, at the same level as the two boys, but was just as good a player in terms of as the way he worked, and, you know, someone who never stopped working for the team. But yeah, no, treat him good moves off the back of playing with me. So
you eventually got one as well. So, but see this dressing room, that's before, this is before the likes of Gardine and Gunning and they sort of boys. Who were the characters in that United team?
Anyone funny? Probably Davy Robertson, Big Lee Wilkie liked to play a few pranks. Dillo would.
Yeah, Sean Dillon.
Would mess about with stuff. Dillo was someone who, like, he has these superstitions. Like, if he touches his elbow, he has to tap his other elbow, and, like, he has to fold his towel a certain way. So, like, boys would be running past him in the warm-up just touching his elbow on, you know, on purpose, but pretending they're not meaning it, and he'd see him tapping his other elbow. Or, you know, he'd go in and he'd mess his clothes up, that he'd be like, oh, has to fold it a certain way.
OCD,
aye, proper OCD. Big Streaky was one that liked to mess about and play practical jokes. And
I would never think that with Big Wilkie.
Aye, Big Wilkie. But he actually got done once with Sean, and I was probably helped slightly, but I had a brace on my knee, so I wasn't overly involved.
Right.
But Dillo, I can't mind what he'd done to Dillo, but he'd done something to Dillo that made him retaliate, and he'd cut out a piece of cardboard, like a registration plate, and he drew the W4NKER on it. And we went round to Streaky's apartment one evening, probably about 10:30 at night, and we stuck it to the front of his motor. But Streaky used to park his car, he used to drive into spaces all the time. So he used to drive in where he parked at his apartment. So, and it was up against bushes, so he would never see it. And then when he got to Tannadice going to training, he'd always park against the wall, so he would never he'd never see the red. So he drove around with this thing for about a week to 10 days on his car.
Love that.
And we were both injured at the time, and he was driving to, I think it was a David Lloyd in Monifieth we were driving up to, and people are obviously looking and laughing, and I'm in the car with him, and he's like, what are they looking, what are they laughing at? So he's probably getting aggressive and angry. And eventually, he walked around the front of his car and he seen it and he's like, bastards. So he then retaliated again with, last game of the season, he brought live crickets and put them in Sean's pockets, my own pockets and someone else's pockets.
So did you put your hand in your pocket? And
So after the game, most players go and get their phone to see what the scores are, check their social media, etc. And we've gone like that into the pocket, bang, phone, crickets everywhere, all over the change.
Decent, I like that for the big man.
It's good.
Good, mate. You scored 11 goals in the second half of that season. What was that down to? Did you, as you say, was Hoosty a bit more
probably
attacking football?
Probably, Hoosty was a striker in his day, so he probably...
Very bad one, but...
So he probably, just unleashed the reins and probably, introduced probably some of the more, younger ones that were... probably more attack-minded. So, I felt I played my best football under Hoosty, if I'm being honest.
Did you, right?
Yeah. Like I said, he just gave you a bit more freedom to go and probably do more and take part in the game more.
See, Hoosty, with the older boys run the dressing room? Whereas...
Yeah, kind of. And I think Craig was similar in terms of, you would have had Baz and Streaky. And then, obviously, then when they moved on, it was myself, Sean... Ranks, Willow, and he would lean on you and ask your opinion and make you feel part of it, and that was part that I really enjoyed.
Right, mate, every United fan, I want to know about the Scottish Cup. Got the semi final. How much was the pressure cranked up? Celtic were knocked out by Ross County the day before.
Ross County, and then we played Wraith. Yeah. Incredible that.
Were you sitting watching the Celtic?
So we just trained, and then we came in and we were having a bite to eat before we went to the hotel, and just watching the game, and Ross County obviously scored, and you're going to look at each other going, all right, see what happens here. You're thinking Celtic are going to come back and win 3 or 4-1, and eventually Ross County saw the game out and won the game, and we're kind of thinking, right, well, we're now sat on a bus to go to the hotel for the semi-final with the opportunity to win the Scottish Cup if we beat two championship teams. And again, no disrespect to the two teams, but we knew if we played to the capabilities that we had in that change room, we should beat these teams, and we showed that. And
so was it actually said? Did somebody actually say, listen, lads, what a chance we've got?
No, we just sat
just
around and that evening we said, lads, we can't mess this up. Eh?
Yeah.
What a chance to win a Scottish Cup and to win a trophy. And as a football player, you don't get many opportunities to win medals and win trophies. And, when you're growing up as a kid and you want to be a football player, you just think it comes all the time and you're always playing in cup finals and it doesn't happen like that. So we knew it was a massive chance and a massive opportunity. So there was probably a bit of added pressure going into that game. But there was probably more of a focus as well, because we knew if Ross County can turn over Celtic, then Wraith can turn us over.
Yeah.
And, we need to make sure that doesn't happen.
What do you remember of that game, the semi-final?
Not an awful lot, to be honest.
Nah.
Just obviously getting through the game, and then the focus then goes to the final, and we're obviously in a good position then, because I think we had secured third place in the league, so we were, Hoosty then could mix his team up in the run up to, you know, the final. And there was no, you know, you could hand pick the games you wanted to play certain players in, and, you know, make sure that they were fresh for that final game.
And how is the preparation for a cup final? Did you go away for on the Monday?
No, we just stayed in just normal week. Just,
was that right?
Yeah, just normal week. We just trained, and then we went.
Did you get the Ted Baker suits in that?
We got suits. I think we had.
I remember seeing you in suits.
We probably did. Yeah, I can't mind. We had suits, the grey ones with the badge.
Yeah.
Gutted with the badge. I couldn't use it again.
That is angry.
That's terrible, isn't it? You know, you don't mind if it's something on the inside. You can then wear it again, but you can't wear it again.
By the way, there was rumours, and this is that team, so I want to address them. There was rumours that Gary Kenneth used to go on a Saturday night to Fat Sam's with a United suit on.
I can't quash them, and I'm not going to confirm them, but I'm not going to say they're not true.
I've seen them in Fat Sam's a couple of times, mate.
Aye, club tie on and off. Obviously we went trained all week, and I think Eustace and the staff done a really good job. They didn't want to play it up. They didn't want to make the game feel any more important than it was. And they tried to make it as normal as possible for everyone. And, you know, we went to the hotel just like we would do for a normal away game. And obviously, I was rooming with Conway actually that night. And we were both talking about, oh, it'd be great to score. Then he went and scored too. I'm sure we watched The Commitments that night as well.
Oh, what a film.
Great film.
Thanks, Ellie.
Yeah.
Brilliant, mate.
Yeah. So it was, that was funny, because you're both, you know, you're lying in your beds and you're just talking about the game and what could happen and what could potentially, you know, happen if it goes the way you want it to, and you're talking about maybe scoring a goal, how you'd love to score, and obviously buzzing for him that he got to that thing.
Did you sleep the night before?
Eventually, yeah. I find it hard when I was playing. I used to find it hard to sleep in hotels. I don't know what it is. Just like my own bed, you know. Yeah. So regardless of the game, it would probably take me a while to get a sleep in a hotel bed.
Uh-huh. Reflections on the game. You must remember a few things for that game.
Yeah, I remember Mick McGovern making a save from one of my headers in the first half, and I was like, oh.
Good keeper, mate.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. And then just the first goal going in, Goody, you know, a ball over the top. I think it was Morgaro maybe played a ball over the top, and that was one time I was happy to run after a ball, because Mick has come out then and cleared it, and it's gone to Goody, and he's lifted it over him from about 40 yards. And from that moment then, we knew that Ross County were going to have to come at us and kind of have to open up. And then when Conway scored that second one, you know, it was really game over. Then third goes in, and you know that's definitely...
How good the feeling is that when the third goes in, you can actually just enjoy knowing that you've won the Scottish Cup?
Yeah, it was incredible. And obviously the atmosphere in the stadium, and something that, you know, you'll never forget. And
see, just on Gomez as well, I always liked Gomez as a player.
Aye, good player.
Good player, wasn't he?
Really good player. And him and Prince.
Prince Barber, that was right.
Two of them were really, really good together at that time and that period. And
what were they like as guys? Quite chilled?
Aye, chilled, yeah. No, they were good guys, They were really good guys and really good players. And
they loved Fat Sam's as well, mate. They loved Fat Sam's. I've seen they two in Fat Sam's.
You probably would have, You would have. I wasn't really wanted to go out that much. I had the wife and little in there.
What a place, though, mate, Fat Sam's.
Fatties, yeah. Oh.
Did you go there a few times?
A few times. I was there once or twice, you know. When you had the team nights out and stuff like that.
What a place. Celebrations after it, is that where you went?
We went back on the bus. We actually stopped at the Westerwood to get some beers for the bus.
At Cumbernauld?
At Cumbernauld. Yeah. And myself and Sean doesn't drink, never has.
Sean Dillon?
Aye.
That's why he's so ripped, mate.
Aye, it will be.
And this is why we're like
aye.
This.
I've not had a night in the past 9 months where I've not drank. So. Right. Sean never drank. So we both jumped off the bus to go into the Westerwood, and Ross County were there, and I was like, oh no.
Oh, were they?
Aye.
Oh no.
Yeah, so
what, you're all jumping about in there just.
So it was not, we just went in to get the beers in for the bus, and you're kind of like, oh,
it's like, oh, you know, one,
it was really awkward. So we just grabbed our beers and legged it. We went back to the stadium, and the club had put on like a few celebrations in one of the suites for the players and their families and close friends. And Hunty had somehow managed to get into that. You know, Hunty's just some man, you know, he managed to get into that, and then the next day he was on the bus, open top bus with us. He was out on the
what, and he wasn't even part of the team.
No,
But he just came up to watch.
I came up to watch, and he managed to just wangle his way into all these celebrations. But no,
love that.
Yeah, he was even out on the is it this Caird Hall, isn't it?
The Caird Hall, isn't it?
Where we went the next day to, and obviously all the fans were there, and we were out with the trophy. He was out with the trophy and all in front of all the fans.
Love that.
Oh, he's just a great guy, great character. But yeah, so in the following day, we obviously had the open top bus around
Dundee
and. But we're all still worse for wear. Went back to the stadium, went back to, I think the club put on another deal at the Hilton. And then the next day we went off to Danny Granger's stag deal to Ibiza for a week.
What a week that is.
Oh, it was incredible.
Would that be one of the best weeks of your career?
I probably the highlight of my career.
Wow.
But yeah, no, it was incredible. But then you had, look, we were all in, had to drive down to Manchester, and obviously the ash cloud was around at that time, and a lot of flights were getting cancelled. So we were obviously concerned that we were going to miss our trip to Ibiza, but we were lucky that we got out before any flights were cancelled. So I had a week in Ibiza after that as well, and got a henna tattoo of the Scottish Cup on my side, and told my missus it was real, and she was raging with me. But that came off after 2 weeks, so that was good fun.
Any stories for Ibiza?
No. Not really, no. Just me and Conway trying to sport speedos, but that was about it.
Did you go speedos full week?
Ah, of course. Good, you
did. Did you any fans recognise you over in Ibiza after just winning the Scottish Cup?
I can't remember. Possibly.
But you're still.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. I wasn't really paying attention.
Brilliant. Right, mate, over the next couple of years, I mean, the list of some of the players are the maddest guys I've met, Gardine and Gunnan especially. What did you make of the scene? You're an older pro. What do you make of the scenes that you see with they two?
Well, I've actually, do you know what, I had
Gardine's nuts, isn't
he? I had deleted all that from my memory until you've just brought it back up. Look, they were harmless, huh?
Yeah,
like, and they were funny, and they try and it's good to have boys like that in your changing room that can lift the mood, especially like if you've come in the Monday after getting beat 1-0 on a Saturday, or you know, and you're trying to forget about it, and these are having a bit of carry on, and I think the big thing with them was they knew there was a line, eh? And if they ever went beyond that...
Were they ever close to getting to the line, John?
Possibly.
What, with jobbies and stuff like that, huh?
Aye, like videoing themselves, doing stuff, like, and sending it to... And you're just going, come on, eh? Like, I'm a dad, eh? I've got a little one at home, I don't need to be seeing stuff like this.
But every time I used to get a Snapchat image, I'd just open it and shut it straight away because I knew it was coming, eh?
Yeah, but like, it was harmless fun that they were trying to do, and... Listen, it is what it is, and as I said, I had tried to erase it from my memory.
Did any of them have the balls to try and stitch you up?
Look, you're part of the group, and there would stuff would happen. Like there was a lot of socks getting caught up at that time, and boxer shorts getting caught up, and you know, you knew it was them, but you could never prove it.
Uh-huh. What about Gunnan? Is he quite funny? Boys are saying that he's got quite big time shouts, but he's obviously doing it in a joking way.
Aye, he would. Like, you know what I mean? He would have that. But look, again, he's a good boy and a good lad. But sometimes it can carry over onto the pitch. Like, I know when I left United, I seen there was one where he picked the ball up and all.
And just walked off.
I know, look what you're doing. Like, but like, that's where he needs someone to maybe just say, Gav, come on. Like, you know, you need to get a grip of yourself. Yeah. But as I said, when it's in the change room, it's in that environment, it's fair game.
Some of the talent that you've had coming through there as well: Armstrong, Mackay Stevens, Gold, Johnny Russell, Scotty Allen. Who's been your favourites? Who were the ones that you could tell straight away?
I think you could tell with them all that they had something and they had ability, and they, you know, when given the opportunity to go and play, they would excel. But I think the one for me was Gary McCoy Stephen.
Was it right?
Like, well, he came in on trial. I'm not sure if he just left Liverpool or something.
I think he went to Airdrie, because we've been to Airdrie, and then he went to on trial at United. That's right.
So he came in on trial and he played a couple of games in training, and we were all like, we were going off to UCD going like, who's this kid? He's a guy, Gary McCoy Stephen. We're trying to get him in from Airdrie. And he had to really fight hard. I remember telling me he had to fight hard to get him like £300 or £400 a week to get him in.
Wow.
Because he'd probably done his budget, or and so the chairman was probably a bit reluctant to release any more funds. But he was just like, some of the stuff he would do in training, he'd see him practicing these tricks, and and you know, scales, and then he would go on a Saturday and he'd actually do the, he would do it, like the one at St Johnstone he'd done on the touchline, like the little,
inside
I don't even know how he'd done it, I'd probably do my knee trying to do it, you know. But like, he would do that in training all the time, and he would do stuff that you would just be, he would actually stop and go, wow, like, that's incredible. So he for me is one of the most skillful players I've played with.
Was there any that were just as good that maybe never hit the heights that they did?
There was a few, like Pongo, Ryan McCord.
Yeah, Ryan McCord.
He was a good player, but just probably never had that opportunity. Greg Cameron was.
Oh, I remember Greg was a good player as well.
He was a tidy football player. Yeah, that, you know, probably never kicked on. So I'd imagine there's probably people I've missed there as well. Like, yeah. But there was a couple of players that, you know. But with football, there's only 11 spots in the team to play. So you need to, when you're given, you know, you might only get half an hour to go and show what you can do. And it's essential that you maybe, you know, and you take that opportunity.
See, the ones that did make it big, did they all have something in common? Was there one thing that they all had that's why they're playing at the top and maybe others aren't?
I think they all had a love for the game. You know, even, you know, John Souter, you know,
yeah,
Goldie, they all kind of came through at the same time, and they all palled around together. But they would go down to, like, the parks on a, you know, after training, you know, when they go home in the evenings and just play football together.
Really, would they, huh?
So, like, you know, they had that real love for the game and all wanted to succeed, and they had that focus that they wanted to kick on. Yes, some of them messed about in the training grounds and stuff like that, and had a bit of carry on, but when it came to the actual training and playing the games, they were you know, switched on.
Finished fourth that season, 22 goals, 2011-2012. You've said it's your best football under Houston, but also the deliveries and the service that you're getting off of the type of players, it must have been a dream for you.
Yeah, well, you had like Paul Dixon from left back, Dillo from right back, then you had the wide players as well. Even when Johnny played out wide, you know. And I was the type of player that relied heavily on
service.
You know, I'm not a good Willie who's going to get the ball, beat three players and score, or Johnny Russell who's going to get it and shift down my feet from 30 yards and bang it in the top end. I needed service, and I kind of knew what I was about and where I was going to get my goals. So it was a case of getting hold of the ball, getting at the players that could supply me service. And thankfully, I had players in the team and in the squad that could deliver that service.
No rocket science, is it? Knock it wide and get in the box.
When I'm in the team, that's what you need to do.
Brilliant, mate. Houston leaves.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
How much of a blow was that? And did, obviously, you, I think you were a captain at the time. Did he come and tell you?
I think he spoke about, he was potentially, because there was obviously talk of myself and I think Willow at the time maybe moving on.
Why was that?
Personally, the contract negotiations hadn't gone well. It wasn't really anything to do with money. It was more to do with the longevity of the contract, to do with the length, and it was just... You spoke about it there, 22 goals. It was the first time I think a striker had scored over 20 goals since the 90s for Dundee United. And I felt I was on, you know, the ascendancy, and I was getting better. And I got offered a year extension. So, you know, the club...
You're getting a minimum two-year.
Well, that's kind of what I was looking for. Yeah. And I think if I'd have been offered that 2 year off the bat, I'd have signed it there and then. I wouldn't have made that same mistake looking for more money. So that kind of, you know, it was probably the bit that annoyed me the most, was that I got offered a year extension and I was like, you know, I'm going to just hold fire and see what pops up. I'm going to just wait and see. And then as the season went on, I was doing well. I was scoring goals. And then when Eusty said he was going to leave, the club had then come to me and said, oh, well, you know, we'll offer you a 2 year deal. But it was to try and use these leaving, but our club captain staying. And I kind of seen through that. And I thought, no, look, I've come this far. I want to see what's available. So that was kind of the main reason why I thought I'd run down my contract and see. I just felt a bit let down by the year extension.
Yeah. Houston leaves and Jackie McNamara came in. was top football under McNamara, wasn't it?
Aye, he was, again, he was someone who wanted the team to play, gave us freedom to play, similar to Hustie.
A bit quieter than Hustie, Jackie?
Sorry?
A wee bit quieter than Hustie?
Aye, he was a bit quieter, but he had, like, obviously Darren Jackson and Simon Sid, Donnelly there, you know, who complimented him. But yeah, no, I thought I enjoyed my 6 months, I think I was with Jackie. I enjoyed that time there. You know, he tried to implement little challenges into training that I quite enjoyed, you know, little crossbar challenges to buy the juice or the sweets for the Friday or whatever. So there's little things that he implemented that probably brought more fun element.
Fun of it, huh? Can I remember being down south and watching some of the games and when Jackie first came in, and some of the football was ridiculous that Dundee United played under him.
Yeah, but the team was there and the players were there, and you know, the younger ones again were.
That was when Golden that first came through, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, you look at that and you think, like, for the first 6 months, Eustace kind of blooding the youngsters, giving them opportunities, and then when Jackie comes in, they have that 6 month experience under their belt, and they know what's expected of them, and you know, and again under a new manager, they're trying to impress, and you know, the football, as you said, was good to be part of and good to play in.
Right, big man, here we go. When do you first hear that Rangers are wanting you?
Probably February or March.
Any other teams?
There was talk of Fleetwood, there was talk of a couple of, but again, nothing concrete, you know, nothing that was put in front of me to say, you know, here's an option or an offer. So I kind of had the Dundee United offer of the year extension, which had then been increased to 2 years, or the option to go to Rangers. So it was actually Eustie that rang me. I'm sure it was February, March, where he rang me and he just said, look, I've had Ali McCoist on the phone asking about you, what type of person, your character, what you can bring and to the table. So he just kind of said, would you mind if I passed your number on? I just thought, would love to speak to Ali. You know, I got a lot of time for Ali, a lot of respect for him. Like, the year we won the Scottish Cup, we knocked Rangers out at the quarterfinal stage, and I always remember how he conducted himself after the game, you know, waited for us all to come off the park, shake our hands, wish us all the best.
Did he, good.
Aye. You know, and we were obviously out celebrating for, you know, 15, 20 minutes after the game with the fans.
He's ripped the arse out of it.
Just totally ripping the arse out of it. But, you know, to have that about you, to stay behind and wait and, you know, shake everyone's hand, and I just thought that was the mark of the man he was and is, and someone that it just stuck in the back of my mind, you know, that I thought the way he behaved in defeat was exemplary. And, you know, I'd seen, you know, times when we beat maybe Celtic or beat other teams where, you know, it wasn't the well done to Dundee United. It was more, oh, we didn't play well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was something that really stood out for me.
So after that's February, how soon after that phone call does Ali McCoist phone you?
Probably a day or two.
How was he on the phone? Funny?
No, he just arranged a meeting. We just spoke, and then we went and we met. Me and my wife Linda went to meet him with the kids. And
did you take him cakes?
I don't think we did at the time, though. So you're probably one of the only ones.
I'm probably higher esteemed than Ali McCoist anyway. So.
So we went and met him and just obviously see what he had to say and what his plans were and how he seen me fitting into that structure. And so, no, I enjoyed the conversation and obviously then thought I'd love the opportunity to go and play there.
How did he look? And he smells brilliant in that, didn't he, Ali McCoist?
I can't recall that. It's not something I could say. I didn't go over and sniff him, you know.
So do you then need to go and tell Dundee United that you're going to leave?
Well, I think I'm sure that Rangers approached Dundee United to say we'd like to speak to your player, because I think you have to go through the process of, you know, you can't. I think you have to let them know you're speaking to the players. So then I spoke to the club and just said, look, I've spoken to Rangers and I'm going to move at the end of the season.
And how did they take that? Not happy?
Well, I don't. I'd imagine they're probably not happy, but at the end of the day, it's a decision that you as a player need to make. And you know, it wasn't like for that last few months of the season I was going to down tools. It was certainly not the type of a character I am, and if anything, I was going to prove more why they should have offered me a 2-year contract from the start.
Definitely. But the day you left, it's a sad day, because great
time
in your career.
Look, it's when I look back on my career, that's the club that, you know, I feel connected to, and it's the club that you know, I've probably had my greatest times and my darkest times with my injuries. So yeah, so it's definitely the club that I feel that I have the greatest connection with, and one that, you know, I want to see them do well and see them progress and you know, just get back to where they should be.
Was there not any doubt, Stuart, the fact that Rangers were going to be in League One that next season? Did that not come in it?
It comes into it a little bit, but like, you know, when you're turning 30 years of age, there's obviously the finances that come into it. There's the terms of the length of the contract. It's going and playing in front of 50,000 people every second week. So, you know, going and playing in League One and playing at smaller stadiums as such didn't really bother me. You know, I played in England in the lower leagues and I was used to smaller stadiums that, you know, tight changing rooms. And so I kind of had that, been exposed to that experience before. So it does come into it a little bit, but it's kind of a secondary thought. And I think the thought of being part of the process to try and help the club get back to where they should be and where it was a good project to go on board with.
The media highlighted the fact you're the first Irish Catholic to play for Rangers. Did you take much notice of it?
Not really, no, because like there's obviously this big thing made of it, you know, oh, he's Irish and he's a Catholic, but I'm not religious at all, and I'm not practicing Catholic, I'm not, you know, so like, if anything, I'm probably an atheist if I'm being truthful, you know. You know, so that all that kind of hype and everything that was, for me, it's just nonsense. And I don't really pay much attention to it. And obviously there was a kind of big deal I made about it at the time that, you know, still getting asked about today, whether it's yourself or other people you speak to, it's obviously still a big talking point. But for me, I just seen it as going and playing for a massive football, you know, they're a, you know, worldwide institution. They're a huge, huge football club that have fans all over the world. Same as Celtic, you know.
Yeah.
Two massive football clubs that, you know, regardless of what league they're in, they still have massive crowds coming and they play at a huge stadium, fantastic training facilities. So I didn't pay much attention to it, to be honest with you.
Was there a lot of negative reaction at home in it?
Yes and no. There was people that obviously aren't happy with your decision. I actually had a few letters to the house.
Did you?
Yeah.
Saying what?
Well, just that I was a disgrace and my family would have been absolutely disgusted with me, but they weren't. They were absolutely delighted. And the one that I remember vividly was it was sent to Dundee United for the attention of John Daly, and it got forwarded on because I wasn't at the club anymore. And I came home from, I think we've been away on holidays just after the summer. I came home and I'm lugging the suitcases into the house. My wife picks up the post. She goes in and sits down. She's gone through it and she's got a handwritten letter. What's this? And I walked in and I looked into the sitting room and I could see her face was raging. And I was just, oh, what's going on here? So she's like, gave me the letter and I just thought, wow, like this guy has sat down, took the time to write this letter of hatred to me about my decision and about how much of a disgrace I am to my family and this and that, and how, you know, taking in quotations the Queen's money and all this, and then signs it off Seamus, whatever his name was, and his address, living in Derby. I'm thinking, are you taking the piss? You're telling me about taking the Queen and you're an Irish fella living in Derby getting paid the same sterling that I'm getting paid. So
it's definitely Willow Flood that wrote that letter, wasn't it?
100%. There was no stamp on it, mind you. So he's just through the door. But you had that, and then there was other, like, one or two that were sent to the club that, you know, just... I eventually got to the stage where I just felt sorry for people that have that hatred within them and feel the need to write that. And I got to where I spoke to Stevie on the front desk and I said, look, Stevie, any mail that comes to me, you check it first. And anything that's negative or not people looking for, you know, signed top or whatever, just I'm not interested. Just put it in the bin. So,
right, on to the more positive stuff. Atmosphere when you first came in under Ali McCoy's, the place must have been buzzing with him as manager.
Yeah, it was great.
Fun place to be, huh?
Yeah, great. And I loved working under Ali. And I felt, you know, going in and, you know, with the career he'd had as a player and as a coach, you know, you could still, I felt I could still learn and still improve and still pick up information and little nuggets that he had. You know, when you look at the amount of goals he scored and, you know, little tips that he could give you, like, it was great. You know, yeah. Even for me at that age, I still felt I could improve. And as you said, the club had just been promoted, so they were all in a good place. And
would he join in training?
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally he would join in the possession boxes or and the odd game. Aye, he could still score and he could still get about. And he always looked to try and nutmeg people in the little possession boxes and have a laugh about that. But yeah, no, I enjoyed working in that atmosphere with him.
See, as a manager, could he still have banter, or did he kind of try and stay away from that?
No, that was the way he was, eh? Yeah. And every manager, as you well know, is different, and they all have different attributes and different qualities, and his was, he dealt with things in that way, and he tried to have that jovial side to him, where he tried to make the atmosphere, you know, probably a bit more fun, which I can understand. You know, when you think of the pressures of playing for a club like that, you know, if it's too serious, it can get on top of people, and that probably took away the attention of all the other stuff that was maybe going on at the time.
Do you remember any funny one-liners that you had, slaughtering boys?
Not really, no. Nah, just not off the top of my head. But like, again, he just loved to have a laugh and a joke.
What about teammates? Who was the good lads in that squad?
Well, I got on really well with Fozzy. Richard Foster at the time. Nicky Law got on really well with. Blackie was a good lad. Lee McCulloch, great guy.
Yeah.
But again, it's funny because before you go and you're teammates with these guys, you have kind of an impression of them in your head. And you do, you just think, oh, these are going to be dicks. Eh? And they're like, you know, but it couldn't be further from the truth. Yeah. You know, like, I'd have many battles against Jig, you know, playing against them. And, you know, he's just a good, honest pro. And then Blackie was similar, someone who you just thought, oh, I'm not going to get on with him. But, you know, when you actually meet them and you get to know them, they're good guys. And, you know, teaches you, you know, you can't just judge people before you meet them.
It's the same with the show, mate. Like, you think your Denny and Black is going to be in Big Jig as well, and they're two great guys.
Brilliant.
Was Jig the captain at the time?
Jig was captain, yeah.
Was he good in letting everyone know what it meant to play for Rangers? And
aye, well, he had that obviously experience of playing there when you know, they were
in the final.
So, you know, he kind of made sure like everyone conducted themselves properly and went through the processes.
Need to ask you, mate. Big Moshney, Jay Screwball, huh?
Not a great guy, yeah. Like, when I seen that happening at Motherwell, it's totally out of character, you know, because he's a really good lad, eh? Like, and it just, obviously, everything that's gone on, and obviously I think Lee Irwin has pulled his hair that day, and it's probably just got a bit too much, you know, and I think he was someone that, you know, playing against him in training, he was a beast. He was so hard to like play against. The big, like long legs, blocking shots, and just always got back and made tackles. And someone who probably at that level found it too easy, and probably lost concentration because he found it too easy.
Yeah.
But when he was focused and he was on it, he was a good player.
Talking about finding it too easy, mate. First season flying, 21 goals for you and comfortably win the league. How was that, stepping out of Ibrox every second week, full house?
Yeah, it was...
Did you raise your game, or is it the same?
No, I think at that age, you know, I was a bit older, so I'd kind of been around the block. I'd played at stadiums like that before, and you kind of get used to playing in games of that magnitude. And with them, you know, obviously then you're going... The difference is you're going and the majority of them, 50,000 people, are there to support the team rather than, you know, you're normally playing against them. So it was great. It was incredible walking out and, you know, tunes blasting and the flags and all the fans singing. But with that comes the pressure of, you know, performing and making sure.
Do you mind that though,
no? No, again, it's probably just part of my character and the way I am. I like that. I like that pressure of having to do that. And again, if you're not performing, they let you know. And you know, even when you sometimes thought you were performing, they let you know.
Well, after games and stuff like that?
Yeah, like, I think because you're in League One and you're sometimes playing against part-time teams, you're expected to just go and win every game 10-0, you know, and it doesn't happen like that. And, you know, you've got to give a lot of credit to the teams. They come, they're organised, they're not going to make it easy for you. And if you don't get a goal early, it then, gives the opposition that little something to hold on to, and it becomes more difficult to break them down, and it makes them go a bit longer as well. Where, you know, the games that were comfortable were the games that you maybe, you know, you scored after 10 minutes and maybe scored a second in 15, 20 minutes, and then you could see that the opposition are thinking this is going to be a long day.
Yeah.
You know, so they're the games that, for me, were the ones that were easier. But when the teams held out for longer periods, it became
tough.
And then the fans then let you know. And that was like when I was at United, and you were going to play Rangers, you were going to play Celtic, or even going to Hearts and Hibs, you would always say, look, first 20 minutes, let's get the crowd turned. And, yeah. And it was strange being on the other side of the fence.
Does a team like Rangers still celebrate winning League One? Is there a party?
Aye, we celebrated, yeah. We celebrated. Of course you do. It's a league title. And it's part, as you said, it's part of that journey to get back to where they need to be and where they are now. And
you get a beer with Ali?
Aye, you get a beer with Ali. Yeah, certainly do.
What, in Ibrox, or did you go out for a
beer? Ibrox, we had a night out as well, I think, as a team, which was good. But I still lived in Dundee at the time. I travelled across every day.
On your own?
Yeah. Right. So I just travelled across, listened to loads of podcasts and
up and go. Did you get an Ali Tusna?
No.
Ah, oh, nightmare. Right, mate, second season. Did you feel confident going to the Championship? Because Hibs and Hearts were in the league at that time, and they were strong, weren't they?
They were. But again, you're going into it and you're
Rangers.
You're Rangers. Yeah. You're a big club, and as Hearts and Hibs are, and you're expecting that, you know, it's going to be difficult. On a personal note, I had to have a clean up of my knee, which was disappointing.
The club, you chase a ball again.
So I could get chasing them balls again. So it was disappointing. I didn't have a proper pre-season under my belt, which then, you know, you're playing catch up throughout the season. But, you know, I think if I remember correctly, Hearts came to Ibrox in the opening day and won 2-1.
Yeah.
Which then, you know, you're straight behind the eight ball straight away, you know, trying to play catch up.
Did it unsettle you that they brought Kenny Miller and Chris Boyden? Did Ali tell you that he was going to bring strikers in over the summer?
No, but you expect it. You expect it when you're at a club, any football club, you expect, you know, them to try and progress, and you expect them to try and bring in competition. And again, Boydie and Kenny, two really good strikers, but different to what I can offer, and you know, they bring different things to the table. So I knew I still had a part to play in terms of, like, if the manager wanted to play a set way, then I could offer that. And yes, when you see them coming in, you probably think your game time is going to be limited, you know, because, as I said, they're two top strikers. But it is what it is. It's, you're at a club like that, you expect to see good players being signed.
Mm. See, just on Ali, when things started to no go right, did he have that switch in him? Could he go through, boys?
I wouldn't say he went through them, but he would let you know he's not happy, and, you know, he would. He wasn't always laughing and joking. You know, he had that serious side to him, and, you know, when you seen that side of him, you actually, personally, you know, I felt that I'd let him down, or, you know, not, he wouldn't necessarily be having a go at me, but, you know, he was that good for the players and with the players that you wanted to do well for him, and when you didn't, you know, you felt like you let him down.
Was there ever a point you remember you thought he's lost control about the situation?
Not really, no. I wouldn't say that you would turn around and say he's lost control, but I think one thing for me is I always look at myself. When things aren't going well, first and foremost, I'll look at myself and say, am I doing enough? Can I do anything different? Can I do more? And there's probably one or two boys that pointed the finger at training, at things that happened, you know, off the park. That for me, you know, when you're playing and you're training and you're winning games,
They don't get spoken about,
you know. But when you're losing games, I think quite a lot of people will tend to look for other excuses rather than just, you know, holding their hands up and saying, you know what, I can maybe do a bit more here.
So what was the reaction to Ali losing his job within the squad?
Within the squad, I would imagine it was a disappointment. Personally, I felt like we let him down. As I said, like, you know, he'd obviously started this journey to get the club back to where they should be, with the club that they are, and I feel sorry for Ali that he never got to complete that journey. It would have been great if he was the one to get them back to the Premiership and have a go at, a season in the Premiership.
Then Kenny McDill took over, felt for Kenny. He didn't want to do that job.
Yeah, he was in a difficult spot because he's obviously close friends with Ali, and you know, it's obviously politics, probably the reasons why they didn't get rid of Kenny at the time. And yeah, it was a tough spot for him to be in.
Kenny's a funny guy, isn't he? He's
no, he's a great manager. I look at managers and I think one big strength of good managers is realising what your strengths are and then complementing yourself with people around you. You know, Kenny was a top coach. Yeah. You know, Ali would probably openly say that that's not one of his biggest strengths. He's a really good man management on that side of it, whereas he got people in around him that could take sessions and could coach the players. And you know, and so you had Kenny and Dranty as well, and you know, good guys that, like, you know,
funny as well, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but like, they all complemented each other well, and I felt that backroom staff was a really good backroom staff. And then, you know, when Ali then loses his job, it's a difficult spot for Kenny to be in because he probably didn't want the job, but he's a professional and he wants to make sure that he continues to do what he's asked to do.
And then Stuart McCall takes over. How did your role in the team change under Stuart McCall?
I became a cyclist under Stuart McCall.
What is that?
The thing is with me, like, obviously with my cleanup on my knee at the start of the season, right, I didn't train as often. So I kind of, like a lot of older pros, you learn to manage your body in a way that come game day, you're ready to go. Yeah. So the start of the week, I wouldn't be physically on the park training. I would be doing stuff in the gym. I would be on the Alter G treadmill doing running and getting my fitness that way, or in the pool doing stuff that way. So I didn't really train on the park until later in the week. But under Stuart, I never really got an opportunity to show what I could do on the pitch in terms of matches. I think I was probably the only ones that didn't play under him or would have played limited game time. And there was times when Stuart would just say, look, no need for you to come in tomorrow. No need to travel all from Dundee. So I would get on my bike and I'd just cycle around Fife. I was getting ready for the Tour de France. So I'd done some ridiculous cycles, honestly. I'd done like 60 miles and 70 mile cycles and all. And
would you say to that when he says you didn't even need to come in? Were you quite happy about that? Or?
No, you're obviously, like, there was times when I was training with the kids and stuff like that.
Did he give you a reason why?
Just, you're part of the bomb squad, aren't you? And you're just not part of the plans. And you know, and the biggest disappointment for me with that situation was it was coming out to the press that I was injured and I wasn't, and that bugged me because I knew that could then affect me looking to try and get my next move. Or I was comfortable with the situation in terms of, you know, a manager doesn't rate you or doesn't want you, that's fine. But I felt the situation, the way it was done, the way it was handled, was wrong. And I just thought, for me, I felt it should have been done differently, you know. But I enjoyed my cycling. I enjoyed being out on my bike.
Blackie told us, well, his teammates here, but I think it was Blackie, that said that the atmosphere became a bit toxic in the end. Would you go along with that?
Possibly. As I said, you know, I think people, if they're honest with themselves, you know, didn't look, I could have done better, could have done more, and start to blame other things that probably, as I said, weren't necessarily reasons for the team not performing.
Yeah. Where did you watch the Motherwell game?
In my house.
On the telly?
On the telly.
And could you believe what you were watching?
No. I couldn't, actually. You know, and even then, I still felt I could help. Like, even throughout my time in Scotland, the team that I scored most goals against was Motherwell. And I was thinking, if you're ever going to bring me back for one game, bring me back for this game, because I will score against these. I always score against Motherwell. But I probably went for a cycle and then watched it.
Was it a bit sad to be your kind of Rangers career petered out in the end?
Yeah, it was. It was. I obviously went there with a 2-year contract to try and get the team back to the Premiership. And that was what I had planned to do. And it was disappointing that, you know, that kind of second season was a bit part. You maybe played part at the start and then towards the end, not involved. So, look, I went there to do a job, and that job wasn't done because we never got back to the Premiership that year.
All right, and then 6 months at Wraith, and then retirement. Was that due to the offer you got for Hearts coaching-wise?
Yeah, like, I hadn't planned on retiring. When I left Rangers, I'd planned to try and go abroad and try and play abroad for a couple of seasons because I wanted to experience that. I'd never done it.
South Africa you went, was it?
I went to South Africa and trained for a week with the view to signing a two-year deal.
You like those two-year deals, didn't you?
Aye, two-year deals at that age
are a must, yeah.
Yeah, so but the terms of that changed when I was out there. Right. And I think it was a case of, let's get him out here so we can see what it's about, and then we'll just offer him less. And that's not how I kind of operate. I like to be upfront with people. And when that happened, I just thought, I'm going to go home and see what else pops up. And while I was looking, Ray McKinnon rang me up about going to Wraith. I met up with him and had a chat, and he made a few good points that, you know, in January the foreign window opens up again, and just get yourself playing, get yourself match fit back in the shop window.
What was that, in the Championship, sorry?
It was in the Championship, yeah. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to go and do that. I'm going to go and play. And I liked what Wraith had to offer and what Ray was talking about trying to do. I went there for 6 months, and during that time I got a phone call about Hearts. Jack Ross had left during the 20s role, so that had become vacant, and I got a phone call to see if I'd want to meet up with Craig, Ann and Robbie to see if I'd be interested in maybe putting myself forward for the job. And
from Untold, Dark, Handsome, Anna, Jack Ross to John Daly. Just quickly, on the end of the Wraith, we shout out to your car school because quite a lot of them watch us. Who was it, Toshney and Benedictus?
Well, there was two car schools from Dundee. It was Toshney, Benedictus, Scotty Robertson, Pongo, Craig Whiting and myself.
Good lads.
Yeah, no, great
again,
lads.
Again, younger, and with the young team.
In with the young team, yeah, young team. And we used to...
Kyle Benedictus can talk some rubbish, can't he?
I certainly can, but good lad, good guy. Look, it was a good time. I enjoyed my time at Wraith.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it there. Great bunch of boys, and a good changing room as well.
So, to Hearts, how was that meeting with Levine Budge, and who else was it, sorry?
Robbie Nielsen.
Yeah, how did that go?
No, it went well. Were you
nervous? See, going from playing football to now have an interview for a job, how was that?
Different. Look, I'd never done it before.
Suit and tie? Collar tie?
No, I think it was like a short and jumper, maybe.
Right, okay, yeah, nice.
Just, you know, smart cash.
Yeah, like your style.
Yeah. No, so obviously we sat down and we spoke about what they were trying to do and how they felt I could be part of that. And then I spoke about how I, you know, what I felt I could bring to the table. And it was a good conversation that eventually led to me being offered the job and left me with a decision then. Do I retire and go into coaching, or do I try and keep playing? But, you know, I'm quite realistic about, you know, the amount of full-time jobs in Scotland. And, you know, to get offered something like that at that stage was... Of my career and of my, you know, my life was a massive, massive opportunity to go into something that I had planned on doing, you know, a couple of years down the line. So I just cut my career short by what I see in 2 years.
What was that? What age? 30?
33,
right.
So it was, for me, it just felt like the right time, right club at the right time to go and do that.
So how closely would you work with Robbie Nielsen in your old 20s, boys?
I wouldn't say I was, you know, working alongside him. Like, Robbie obviously was dealing with the first team, but, you know, he was obviously there himself. Stevie Crawford were there to help in any which way they could. You know, obviously when you're stepping into a role like that, having not done that as your job previously, it can be difficult, and you're learning on your feet as you go along. And it was myself and Liam Fox were in charge of the 20s at that time, and you know, they were all really, really helpful in helping me settle and helping me, you know, step into that role.
You're placed in the interim charge with Andy Kirk when Robbie left. You said you didn't want the job then. Why was that?
I probably knew someone else was coming in. I didn't want to upset the boat. So I think at the time I still felt, you know, I was a novice, and I still felt that I had stuff to learn.
See, when you look back now, do you think you could have done it?
Possibly. I think the structure of the club and the way it was, I think, you know, the way they had Craig in as the director of football, you know, he was there to be a sounding board for a young coach. So, you know, if that was to be the same and you know, a young coach is stepping in as the head coach, then, you know, if you have any issues or you have any situations that pop up that you're maybe not sure about and you have someone like that to bounce your ideas off, then probably, yeah, I think, you know, I think any one of the three of us, myself, Andy or Foxy, probably could have stepped up into that role with that support from above.
I was going to say, how was that relationship going for Craig Levein being your manager to now kind of working alongside him?
Well, again, like I mentioned earlier, I felt that he had mellowed, you know, obviously with maybe the change of role had mellowed him out, and maybe, you know, from going from Dundee United to Scotland maybe changed him also, because I'd imagine at Scotland you probably can't be the same as you are
in
Dundee United, or even as a club manager going to a national manager, it's going to be slightly different, you know, because they're not your players, you know, you're loaning them players from different clubs. So so as time had kind of progressed, you could see that he had mellowed and he changed, and you know,
did he come and watch your sessions and that and like give you, you should do that, maybe do that better? Or
he would never say you should do this better, you should do that, but he would maybe say, why have you done it like that, or why would you do it like that? And if you gave him, you'd give the reasons, and he'd maybe say, well, you could also maybe try. He would never like say, this is how I want it done, or that's how. He would always give you the freedom to do it how you wanted to do it, and with also then giving you advice whenever you needed it.
I still see, when I see ex-managers that I played under, so I've still got that wee bit of fear of them. Did you still have that in that
I still
role?
Call them gaffer,
right? Do you still call them gaffer?
Yeah,
right?
And prefer most of my gaffers, when I see them, I'll call them gaffer or boss, yeah.
Right. Ian Cathro came in. How did you get on with him?
Grand, yeah. Ian, again, similar to Robbie, it was kind of the 20s in the first team, and you kind of supplemented players up to them when they needed them. I would have liked to have seen more of Ian's training, because from what I'd heard and what the little I'd seen of it, you know, it was really good. He was really good in the training pitch. So I would have liked to have seen more. But the bits, the little kind of, I think we maybe saying two sessions in his time there, because I was obviously training at the same time,
yeah.
So I think on the training park he was excellent, and from, like I said, from what I've heard from the other coaches at the time, he was really good. His detail was excellent.
I thought that was good. What do you think he maybe struggled with it?
Probably some of the other managerial issues, and you know, and I think maybe the media side of things, and he probably wasn't overly comfortable with, you know, speaking to the media, and I think sometimes then, you know, people get a perception of you from what they see on the TV or the camera, yeah. So
did you find him how we seen him on camera?
No, he was different, huh? Like, I think he was fine, huh? He was all right, good lad, just good guy,
yeah.
Just love football, good, and as I said, good coach, just wasn't to be, unfortunately, you know, and ultimately, you know, I think when he came into a squad that probably didn't have the capabilities or the qualities to do what he expected of them and the way he wanted them to play, and so there was obviously a big turnover of players during that period. And then with that, then if you don't get results, you know, at a club like Hearts, a club like any club, you know, if you're not getting results, then that pressure mounts. And unfortunately, that's what happened.
I always wonder this. Do you think his lack of a playing career hindered him in any way?
I wouldn't say so. Yeah. Because, like I said, the couple of sessions I've seen, like I think if that's an issue, then the players don't respond, or the players probably lose respect, and the sessions I've seen, they were all engaged, they were all switched on, yeah. So I wouldn't say so.
When we talk about your sacking and your appointment as intern, was it Peterhead his last game? We played just up at Peterhead, was that his
Dunfermline,
last game?
Dunfermline, I think
Peterhead, then Dunfermline,
yeah,
right?
Dunfermline. So Dunfermline was the last game in the League Cup.
That's right.
Cup. Yeah, so obviously when he lost his job, I got asked to step in.
Who asked you, Craig?
Craig asked me, he said, like, would you mind stepping in until we find someone? So yeah, so I thought, do you know what, why not? It's a good opportunity to step in to with a group of players that want to improve and want to get better. And again, it's a difficult one because you don't know how long you're going to be in charge. You don't know, you don't know how many games you're going to be there for. So it is tough, huh?
So like, you're even told that if you do well, the job's yours, nothing like that?
Or no,
you're
no.
Told it's going to be this amount of games? No.
So you don't know if it's going to be someone's going to be in by the first after the first game, second game, third. So you're kind of in a position where, you know, you have ideas of how you'd like to do things or how you'd like to play, but you can't really implement them in that role. You know, and I think at that time, that was slightly different to the time we took the team at Ross County, because Robbie had left on a high and the players were all in a good place. And, you know, it was just a case of copy and paste, you know, what Robbie was doing. Let's just put the same team out. You know, they're in a good place, and we'll just keep the team running until someone comes in. But obviously in this case, Ian had left off the back of, you know, difficult results. The team wasn't doing well. Confidence was low. So you're kind of going in and you're thinking, like, right, if I'm a player, what do I want? I want just intensity in training. I want training to be enjoyable. You know, and you're trying to just get them back, getting the fitness levels going again and getting them running about again and getting them enjoying being a footballer again and, you know, trying to take their mind off what's gone previously.
Did you tell Craig that you wanted the job? Because you came out publicly and said you wanted the job full time. When Craig offered it, had you said, I want this job on a full time?
No, I never said that to start to him, but like as you kind of get into it and you're enjoying the role and you're enjoying...
Is it good, is it?
Yeah, I enjoyed everything that came along. You know, even having to deal with the media and probably the stuff that Ian didn't enjoy. I quite enjoyed doing that. So I felt probably... After the previous one of saying that, you know, it's probably not for me just now, I felt that I was in a better place, you know, myself. That if I got offered, I felt, right, okay, I can crack on here and give this a go.
Was there ever a time that you actually thought you were going to get the job?
I think you're always hopeful, but I think, you know, it was a difficult task because, you know, you look, the games we had, you got Celtic away, Kilmarnock away, Rangers away and then Motherwell away and like historically in recent times they're the most difficult venues for Hearts to pick up results. So it was a mammoth task. We would all have loved to have a game at Tynecastle. But again, with the stand being developed and stuff, all them games were away from home, so it was definitely a difficult task.
You mentioned Celtic away. You ended up getting a war of words with Brendan Rodgers. What was it? Was it the issue? Was it the comments on Craig Levein?
It was more to just take the attention off being battered 4-1.
The next day, sort of things you're actually thinking of.
The next day, there was no talk about the result. So it was more so just, you know what? Like, he obviously made comments that I didn't necessarily agree with. You know, and again, I went in to see him after, like, to see, but he wasn't there. And I was going to say, look, I've had a go at you in the press, but it's smoke and mirrors. It's just to take the attention away from being battered, like, you know.
Yeah.
It was funny because it kind of gathered momentum. And it was funny at the time, but again.
And did he get in touch with you?
No. But I seen him, obviously, when Celtic came through later in the season, and you laugh about it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then Craig Levein gets the job. Did you expect that?
No, I think everyone thought it was going the way it had been under Ian, you know, a novice kind of head coach, novice manager. I think we all kind of expected that they were maybe going to go away from what they had planned. You know, they had kind of this structure in place where the boot room model, where it was, you know, younger coaches come in and then they move on, and then the next ones come through, and I think. That was kind of the plan and the process that they had in place. But I think when Ian came in and it didn't work with the younger coach, I think we always felt they were going to go and get maybe a more experienced head to try and get the club back on track. Didn't expect it to be Craig, to be honest. I thought it might have been...
What was your reaction to him getting it?
Again, it's probably similar to, you know, when Eustee got the United job. You're kind of going, right, okay, it's... Can see why they've done it, and you can see, you know, there's going to be continuity in terms of everyone else knows and he knows how everyone else operates and how everyone else works. So, and again, it was an opportunity to work under, you know, Craig in a, as a manager then. You know,
who was a very successful club manager before that.
Yeah, so it was an opportunity to work under someone and learn from someone and, you know, in a different sense. Obviously, when he's in that director of football role, it's different. So, so yeah, it was a surprise. But when I probably, you know, sit down and actually think about it, probably not, you know, surprised when I heard it. But then when you think about the logistics of it, you probably think, right, okay, I can understand why they've done that.
And you mentioned earlier that you thought he'd mellowed since Dundee United. Was that maybe one of the reasons why it didn't work out for him as well as it did at Dundee United?
I don't think so. I think when you look at, you know, he brought in quite a few experienced players and they, you know, his key players. And I know people are probably fed up hearing this and think it's an excuse, but, you know, when you take Suter, Naismith, all these boys out of the team through injuries, you know, it's going to play. It's have its, you know.
Haring was another one, wasn't he?
Haring was another one. Ikpeazu was out for a while. Because the first kind of season when he got that squad together, like I think they were top of the league in October, so they were doing really well. And you know, not saying they were going to go and win the league, but you could see that the team that he had kind of generated wasn't far away. It was maybe, in my opinion, it was probably missing a bit of width. You know, some wide players. We kind of relied heavily on younger wide players, but maybe a bit more experience in the wide areas would have probably given the squad a bit more balance. But as I said, when you take away the key players and probably, you know, the first five players that are going into your starting 11, when you take them out for a substantial period, it's going to take its toll. And then like anything, you know, it becomes a habit. Eh? Like when you're winning, it becomes a habit. When you're getting beat, it becomes a habit. And you know, when the team would concede a goal, you could sometimes see, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
So I felt for him because I felt the squad that he had assembled was a decent enough squad. He never, after that initial kind of three-month period, he never really got a chance to put all them back on the park same time.
And then he goes and Daniel Stendel comes in. Did you get a bad impression of him straight away?
No, not at all. I think when Daniel came in, I think the first day he was in, we were on our pro licence. So we'd spoke to the club and said, look, what do you want us to do? We're on our pro licence. And we'd been told by the Scottish FA, it's 100% attendance. You can't miss any days. So the club were like, look, no, we spoke to Daniel, it's fine. Just, you know, go and do your pro licence and come and meet him on the Wednesday. So on the Wednesday, we came in and Daniel walked in, stood up, shook his hand, introduced myself. And then I sat there for an hour and I was thinking, what's going on? Eh? So I kind of knocked on his door and said, do you mind if we have a chat?
So sorry, you shook his hand outside his office, then he went in his office for an hour?
Aye.
And you're sitting outside?
So I was sat at my desk.
Right.
And with the other coaches. So I kind of sat there thinking, like, what's happening now? So eventually just knocked on his door and I said, like, Gaffer, do you mind if I have a quick chat? And he's like, yeah, and you come. So I just kind of said, look, just I don't know what your plans are in terms of staffing, etc. Like, I know when a manager comes in, they want to bring their own people in, and I get that. Yeah. And I was 100% aware of that. But I just said, look, until you get your own staff, I said, I'm here to help you in any which way I can. So feel free. Like, if you want, whatever you want me to do, I can help in any way. And he was like, right, grand. And so that day he asked me to watch training. So I just watched training. So obviously end of training, what did you think? And I just said, look, I enjoyed, because the way he kind of worked, the German way, and I quite enjoyed it. And I thought it was quite intense, the training. And I just said, it just took the players a little bit of time to get used to it, you know, because it's new.
Yeah.
And I think he took offence to that. So it's like, right. But then obviously the comments of, you know, I can't trust anyone. That was, for me, was a slight on my character. And I was disappointed with that, you know, because I'd kind of, as I said, I'd gone in and I'd kind of said, look, until you get your people in, I'm quite happy to help you out in any way I can. And but unfortunately, I get why he did it. Like, you know, he's obviously trying to
get a reaction
from and make things happen, you know, try and speed up the process of getting his own people in. And I understand that, but at the same time, I thought it was a wrong way to go about it. And
did you pull him for saying that about you?
I wasn't there. I think I'd left, but I only got, I was on BBC, I think, a couple of weeks later, someone had asked me about it, and then I spoke about it for the first time. And
so who told you your time at Hearts was up?
No, he kind of just said, oh, Anne will speak to you, Anne will speak to you. So Anne Budge kind of said, look, Daniel's wanting to bring his own staff in. And I said, fine, I get that, I understand that. And that's the thing, when you make that transition from kind of under 20s youth coach to first team coach, or you put yourself out there to be involved in the first team, you are putting your head above the parapet to be shot down, and that when a manager loses their job, you're then in a position where your job security probably isn't as safe. It's not, you know, it's not the same as probably when you're a youth coach, you're probably a bit more secure. So I got that when Craig left, I kind of thought, right, well, your days are probably numbered. Uh-huh. So I just felt that the way it was handled, and, you know, and personally, I try and take something from every situation, whether it's a positive, whether it's a negative. And, you know, for me, I took out of that situation the way you treat people, you know, and, you know, I've always been of the mindset that if I got a job, I would look to bring my own people in. And sometimes, you know, it might be worthwhile just seeing what's there as well.
What's already at the club?
Aye.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Despite how things ended, looking to get back in it, I think you should do management, mate.
I'd like to. I'd like to give it a crack. But again, it's just opportunities, in it, and it's the way things are at the minute. It's, you know, it's just waiting for football to start back up again properly. And obviously the Premiership is back up and running. You know, so you're kind of just waiting for, it's a horrible industry. You know, we're sitting here waiting for someone to get the sack for me to get an opportunity. And it's terrible. It's terrible, but that's the way it is. And, you know, I'd be quite open-minded again going abroad and trying something. I wanted to do it as a player. So even if I got the opportunity as a coach, it would be good. And I still think I can learn. I can constantly learn and develop. And so even, you know, as an assistant, and, you know, long term, I would like to have a crack at management.
And back on that bike, back cycling, mate.
I'll need to get it off the wall. I've been reading too many of them.
John, thanks very much,
no
mate.
Problem.
Top man.
Good man.
Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.